drawing to a close. You remember, we have this week and next week to finish. And he raised the question of the, which is the best king? And Antoinette assured him that it had to be David, and then they're kind of arguing about second place, I guess. But I'd like you to understand that what makes David the ideal king? Because there are a few people who mess up more than David does. He messes up royally, but that worked pretty well, didn't it? Okay. But what offsets that?
Man after God's own
heart. That's the language we know, that he is a man after God's own heart.
He has a penitent heart.
A penitent heart, thank you. And we know that from Psalms. It seems we attribute a couple of the Psalms to, especially those penitential ones that we think about. All right, thank you. And what else might we attribute to him that makes him God's ideal king?
Attention to worship.
Yes, sir.
Say that. What's the first word you said?
Well, he's always concerned about worship, proper worship.
Okay. Was attention. Is that what you said? Attention to worship, and then you add to that proper worship. All right, and I think we want to get to that, but I think in this passage in 1 Chronicles 16, I think we see this another element that adds to that. I think he may be an ideal king because he could write this song, or he could voice this song that is reported to us. And again, this is in some ways like a psalm, I suppose, isn't it? It is a song of thanks. I'm just going to read to Wallace to warm ourselves up. 1 Chronicles chapter 16. Let's start in verse 8 and hear the language here. This is a man who attends to worship. Oh, give thanks to the Lord. Call upon his name. Make known his deeds among the people. Sing to him. Sing praises to him. Tell of all his wondrous works. Glory in his holy name. Let the hearts of those who seek the Lord rejoice. Seek the Lord and his strength. Seek his presence continually. Remember the wondrous works that he has done, his miracles and the judgments he uttered. O offspring of Israel, his servant, O children of Jacob, his chosen ones. He is the Lord our God. His judgments are in all the earth. Remember his covenant forever, the word that he commanded for 1,000 generations, the covenant that he made with Abraham, his sworn promise to Isaac, which he confirmed to Jacob as a statute, to Israel as an everlasting covenant, saying, to you I will give the land of Canaan as your portion for an inheritance. I'll stop right there. We'll read on in a minute. But I want you to notice this astonishingly celebratory heart, the celebratory spirit. In some ways, Gaynor used the language of worshiping in a proper way. And I certainly don't want to deny that. It's been one of our, maybe the central tension of the whole quarter. And we started early in the quarter when we noted, here is Uzzah in the ark, right? That he gets himself in trouble, and David says, but it was because we didn't do it according to the rule, right? And that matters. That's that appropriateness, and we want that. But at the same time, we have seen the phrase, this that is repeated so thoroughly in the text, a whole heart. And so it's not appropriateness by itself, though we can't let that go. And it's not a whole heart. It is the tension between the two. We want to see both of those at work. And so in this passage, see, this particular passage, there is not specific attention to the manner of worship, because that's not his purpose here. But I'm not discounting what Gaynor said. It's there. In fact, I would suggest to you, one of the main part of our lesson tonight is this whole two-book series sequence is addressing, remember it addresses God's city in Jerusalem and God's temple, the house of God's name inside. And it matters how that's done. It matters that there, all these people are appointed and stationed in their jobs. And we're setting up God's worshipful order. That matters. But here, what do we see? We see this astonishing language. We might learn that. In fact, if you remember when the ark is brought, And this is a kind of a troubling. Remember, when the ark is brought, what happens? Who sees and responds to David's response?
His wife.
His wife, Michael.
Just trying to find that.
Yeah, so that's just really the preceding chapter, chapter 15. And so, and what does she do? What does she see first?
She sees him dancing.
Yeah.
She stole.
Yes. And she said, David was dancing and celebrating, and she despised him in her heart. See, that's a puzzling passage. I want you to, or at least we've talked about it, so I'm not necessarily trying to revisit it, but I do want you to see that people are revealing their hearts. And you can get all the rightness you can and miss the heart. On the other hand, you can get all the heart and forget the rightness. So what we're trying to do, and I hope, again, as we draw the end of the quarter, we're trying to get things we can take with us on the road and say, this is a sure understanding for the moment that I can take from the Chronicles and try to kind of work them into the shape of my thought, the habits of my conduct, and we'll keep working on that idea, I think. One more example of this. Go back to chapter 13. This is in the context, and this may be the nice example of where we see the other side. Remember, we talked early in the quarter about how everybody heard about Uzzah a lot growing up, right? And with reason. But maybe that was too much one-sided. Let's look at this. I'm in chapter 13 now. And we get this language, and here again, this is so alien to me that I need your help. And that is verse 8. And David and all Israel were celebrating before God with all their might. Okay. Now it goes on with songs and lyres and harps and tambourines, cymbals, trumpets. So we get lots of instruments there, and I'm not arguing about that. We understand that there are other, but it is this language. They're celebrating before God with all their might. All right. Now, again, I'm just confessing. I do not sing with all my might because I've been coached for decades not to. And I'm a good student. I listen well to those who have my best interest at heart.
Singing songs. We're all thankful.
Thank you. That's right. But again, I want to get that. It's celebrating with all their might. And I would say, you know, whatever that means, and this, I think, is part of what makes David God's man, is that it is the wholeness of the commitment of his heart. Again, do not mistake me. I'm not taking one side or the other. I want to hold two together. And that's the trick. How can I? That's those arrows of the tug of war, the tension between those two that we need to keep in mind. So I invite you to think about that. If nothing else, in your own prayers, in my own prayers, I might help myself if I bring in this kind of celebratory language. Right? Think about that. That's one practical way on the road I could take this out and say, when I pray, can I include some of this language in my prayers? Now, one other thing I want to note in this, in just a few verses that we read, when I go back and look in verses 10 and 11, what repetition do I see? 10 and 11, it's back at 16. First Chronicles 16, verses 10 and 11. Three times in there, I think. Maybe or four, is it? Three times in there. Seek the Lord, three. If you go through the Chronicles as we have, I'll note for you another formulation that gets repeated on that time. But just the one word seek is offered insistently. And I invite you to think about that. This is another such an active gesture, such an active posture. I'm not reclining. I'm not simply at ease. I am seeking. Think about that as well. Is that something that characterizes us? And remember the connection I think I made in the New Testament is Colossians 3, seek things that are above. That same command is given there. All right, now, here's what I'm going to ask for an extension to see if somebody, this is your test, who can remember the phrase that included the word seek that we saw repeated a number of times, enough that we have a pattern here. It's a test. If you don't get it right, well, it's all right. We'll just learn it again.
Well, we all get a trophy.
You get a trophy anyway.
You're talking about the seeking.
Well, we're certain the word seek is in this formulation, but it's a particular pattern, particular little phrasing that included seek, but had a couple of other words too. And I wanted to see the grouping together and think about it again. This is something we have talked about. If you don't remember, go to 2 Chronicles 19 and 20 and take a look there. 2 Chronicles is not limited there, but you see in those two chapters, it's there more than once.
Seek with all their heart.
Did not seek.
That's part of it, is that extension. It is, how do I seek? I seek with all of my heart. And see, that's that wholeheartedness again. See, that here again, the story of Kings is the first thing I think about learning from Kings. It's not about heart, but I think that's what I have gotten from this time through these books. Is the wholeness of the heart in the seeking is certainly a part of it. So thank you. You've added to the formulation, but there's another part that's repeated more than once.
Set your heart to seek.
Notice, instead of, and I want to emphasize this compounding going on. First, we have just simply a command, seek. And it's a good command, one that we could do well to follow. And then we have a modification of it. How do we seek? Seek with your whole heart. But then we've got, as Dale suggested, set your heart to seek. We've talked about it before, so there may not be more you want to add about it, but I do at least hold it before you to invite you to think about what addition do we get when we say not merely seek, but set your heart, or even seek with your whole heart, but to set your heart. Maybe there's more, no more, but I'm going to at least pause and...
Prepare your heart.
Okay, that's what yours says. Instead of said, it has prepared.
You have prepared your heart.
Okay, thank you. That helps us to think about this.
There was a thought before you seek.
A thought before you seek. And notice, here again, it's pretty easy to think of heart as, at least in our time, it's pretty easy to think of heart as the seat of feeling. And you just feel like seeking. But setting and preparing suggest an intentionality and a purposefulness that are not necessarily feeling dependent. So I invite you to think about that too. But let's go ahead and make sure we see the place where that language is. 2 Chronicles, I think I'm 19. 2 Chronicles 19 and verse 3, set your heart to seek God. Right. So that's something you can ask yourself. Have I set my heart to seek God? And I don't know what that might mean so if you want to explore that some more, or that's maybe something you want to take for yourself and say, how can I work this into my life? Susan?
Well, I was searching this, and it's in 20, so just exactly a chapter before. Later,
okay.
20 in verse 3, it says Jehoshaphat set his face to seek the Lord. And I thought that was kind of an interesting change from set your heart to set his face. I would take that as determination.
Right.
Set the course.
Like when Luke says Jesus set his face toward Jerusalem. In other words, that's the plan. I'm going to go. That's what's going to happen.
Especially when you think about the face, it does give you a pretty conspicuous sense of visual orientation. You're lining up where you're going to go. It has a compass-like sense about it, that kind of purposefulness. In fact, I think we see the language in the New Testament. Jesus set his face to go to Jerusalem, right? That's that, okay, thank you for that. More, we can, by the way, in that same place, you mentioned chapter 20, verse 3, two times right after that, we get to seek. So we don't have the other additions there, but we do have that language. All right.
Well, even back in 1 Chronicles 16, let the heart of those who seek the Lord be joyful.
There. Okay. Thank you. Going back, so again, we don't have that same formulation, but we do have the same components there. The heart of those, be joyful, of those who are seeking the Lord. I hope you understand that, someone who's mastered with his face grimness, I think it'd be nice to say, for people to discern one way or another in your manner a certain joy about what you're doing, and that would be a useful testimony. All right, thank you for that.
Andy?
Yes?
I'm looking at 2 Chronicles 7, I lost it.
13. 2 Chronicles 7, and you said 14?
Uh-huh.
All right.
It says, "And my people who are called by my name humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, that I will hear from heaven, will forgive their sin, and will heal their land." So that puts the emphasis on God's face instead of the person's face, which is interesting. Putting that together with the other verses we read, I think about when I'm talking to my kids, and it's important for me to get my message across. I'm like, my eyes are up here, not over there, up there, right, or over there. I want your face looking into my face so we can have this communication.
Thank you for that. So there's a, here again, some of this is metaphorical language, but we're given some of it just plain downright physical language that emphasizes some, again, it's you're talking about an intentional moment of parenting. And surely that's a child who's thinking that, my mother is being intentional at this moment. No, they're just scared to death right now. Yes, okay, thank you for that. And notice that in that section, something that we see reference to God's name. Well, we're doing this for the honor, the glory of God's name. All right, thank you. Someone else want to take us somewhere related to this? If not, we'll go back to 16 and 17. All right, well, let's just pick up for a moment and read some more. I'm back in 1 Chronicles 16. And we'll just pick up, we're going to finish the song, and I want to show you a couple of things there. May not be, we'll see. I'm in verse 16 and verse 19. "When you were few in number, of little account, and sojourners in it, wandering from nation to nation, from one kingdom to another people, he allowed no one to oppress them. He rebuked kings on their account, saying, 'Touch not my anointed ones, do my prophets no harm. Sing to the Lord, all the earth. Tell of his salvation from day to day. Declare his glory among the nations, his marvelous works among all the people. For great is the Lord, and greatly to be praised, and he is to be feared above all gods. For all the gods of the peoples are worthless idols, but the Lord made the heavens. Splendor and majesty are before him. Strength and joy are in his place. Ascribe to the Lord, O families of the peoples. Ascribe to the Lord glory and strength. Ascribe to the Lord the glory due his name." There's the name again. "Bring an offering and come before him. Worship the Lord in the splendor of holiness. Tremble before him, all the earth. Yes, the world is established. It shall never be moved. Let the heavens be glad. Let the earth rejoice, and let them say among the nations, the Lord reigns. Let the sea roar and all the fields, and let the field exult and everything in it. Then shall the trees of the forest sing for joy before the Lord, for he comes to judge the earth. Oh, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, for his steadfast love endures forever." Okay. I don't know how you can help me understand. Verse 35 goes on, "Say also," why that little extension, that narrative interruption? We'll go ahead and get those couple of verses here. Save us, O God, of our salvation, and gather and deliver us from among the nations, that we may give thanks to your holy name and glory in your praise. Blessed be the Lord, the God of Israel, from everlasting to everlasting. Again, exalted celebratory language here in 1 Chronicles 16. And that may be something that I need to take from our class, is my own, increase my own capacity, my own yearning for this kind of celebratory language. Okay, anything you want to build on there? If not, I'll take you to another place. Just another chapter.
Worshiping mightily a while ago?
Yes.
Be the opposite of worshiping casually. We're not just sitting there spectators over what's going on. We are supposed to be fully engaged.
Thank you. All right. Thank you for interjecting this kind of structure of an opposition. Over here is worshiping mightily. What could we put in as an opposite? And you say casually. My guess is we could come up with some other words too. It might be a useful list to play off of this. Casual, not casually, but engaged was another word of yours. All right, thank you for that. This actually raises another topic, and I will I'll just ask you to think about with me. Last week we talked some about character, both the character of the king and the character of the people, which is really the pointing of their hearts. But I wonder how the structure, the emphasis on a temple and right worship and the priests and everybody in their proper places, if there's some connection between that kind of orderly structure and character. Are they just accidental, coincidental, or is there a kind of a reinforcement? Can I help my character by participating in the right structure? And by the way, the New Testament word that comes to mind is the word for household. Right, the word for economy, our modern word economy, comes from this word, the order of the household. And so does the order of the household help me in my character? Does the order of the church help me? Is a character tied to something? Oh, that's a weird connection, so I'll just leave and see if anybody wants to work with it. I may leave you, that may be something to think about for next week. So what other word might we use as an opposite of worshiping mightily? Is there something that, yes, go ahead.
Well, indifference.
Indifference, thank you, all right.
Or the eyes.
all right, one of our three eyes.
Yeah. In the Minor Prophets where after they've come back from exile, they kind of get reprimanded because they start going through the motions or doing things their way and not adhering to the law. Lost their character.
All right. Well, they have, it seems like they've lost their orientation of their face toward the face of God. They haven't set their hearts to seek God. All right, thank you for that. So indifference, you said going through the motions. What's our fancy word for going through the motions?
Perfunctory.
There you got it. Perfunctory. Perfunctories, going through the motions. And the way I try to explain that to school students, I tell them that you might have a great, great aunt who you adore mightily, and you might kiss her on the cheek, but the pucker for that kiss is different from the pucker of another kiss. More perfunctory, I might suggest, rather than perhaps passionate. So thank you for that. So perfunctory and indifferent are there, and casual. We're getting an array of words that just hearing of them makes them sound kind of off-putting. We don't necessarily want them.
But indiscriminate.
Indiscriminate, how interesting. Where did that come from? Let's think about it.
Well, they worshiped idols a lot of the time.
Okay.
They didn't seem to care much about God they were worshiping.
Thank you. So, and indiscriminate. All right. Failing to discriminate. Failing to rightly. By the way, discriminate has such a bad reputation in our time. But understand that it is an essential word. we have to discriminate every day. Every day. We just have to discriminate rightly.
Right.
And there are wrong discriminations. We want to avoid that. But we don't want to be indiscriminate, failing to... Right, which, by the way, takes us back to Uzzah, right? But his motives were a man of good motives, it seemed like. He was trying to help out God. But he didn't discriminate in the way God wanted.
All right, thank you.
Somebody else?
We're instructed in 1 Corinthians 14, where we're to do all things decently and in order.
All right, thank you. Yes, and that's a case where the spiritual gifts seem to have imparted in 1 Corinthians 14, imparted quite a bit of energy and actually conflict again, right? My gifts are better than your gifts. So it becomes kind of faction divisive rather than helpful. And so there is this general admonition. A couple of verses before that, God is a God of peace and not of confusion. And then let everything be done decently and order. So yes, thank you for that.
And then also in verse 26 or 2, it said, let all things be done unto edifying.
To edify. So, right. It's not about your own personal adventure with God. This is about corporate worship, about us together as the people of God worshiping, yes.
So I was thinking about that verse a few minutes ago and
Picturing
your tug of war, the two arrows going up. So we've got where we want everything to be decently and in order,
right.
But because of that, have we lost the great emotion and the things that David talked about? So I think we can do both.
Well, that's yes, and it's not an either or, but I'm going to pester you. Is the alternative emotion to worship mightily? Is that to worship with kind of passionate display? And that's that's a word to bring up. We need to think about emotion in relation to this. You were about to say something, please.
I'm gonna make a play on words. Instead of mightily, weekly, as in you're weak, or weekly only, not daily.
Oh, whoa, now a double play. All right. So, well, have fun. All right. So it is a. And so if you think. If worship, we have our collective worship, as we should, and we have weekly appointments for that. But in a sense, that's something that could settle into routine and perfunctoriness. But all right, thank you. We've got this other side to wrestle with, and I'm glad that I appreciate your giving voice to these. This compound system that we've got to think about. How do we do this? Any more input from others?
I want to go back to hers.
All right.
The emotions comes in the relationship we have with God and with Jesus. The joy that we get from a Savior. The thankfulness of God sending His Son for us.
All right.
Those emotions come out of a relationship you have.
Okay.
And it's not routine of just doing it and very orderly, because that's not what God wants. He wants a relationship with us.
Yes, thank you for that. In fact, I have to confess, I struggle with the word legalism. And I used, when Curtis was here, I used to have about every 6 months, I have to get a refresher definition, and he'd help me think about it again. And then, since he's been gone, I've had gone to Jeff, and he's given me the definition that's kind of settled it for me. Legalism is rules without relationship, and so the point is not to reject rules; it is to have rules, but have rules within a relationship. These are both. So there again, we're back to the tension now. And so one of the reasons I brought up worship things, because I think, and I want to give our elders great credit for this. You understand that as a response to COVID and the aftermath of the COVID interlude, we've restructured our order of worship, our routines, our weekly gathering, and I think maybe there's some people that differ and I haven't heard from them, but it seems like the changes have been fairly well received. Is that a fair statement? And I think especially, I think there's a sense that the Lord's Supper, the communion, has become perhaps easier to not be perfunctory. Obviously, it's still individual choice, and it may depend on us on a given day, but at least here's an example of how the collective structure has at least perhaps helped us in that. And we have two of our elders here, and I'm glad to thank them publicly for that. And I know they took in input from a number of people to get there, but it seemed like it's been a good move. Okay. Here's a word. Let me show it to you. Let's go to 2 Chronicles 20. It's something I've listened back to the passage we've considered. But it's in here twice, the phrase I'm thinking about. And I just want you to help me think about what it means and why it might be included here. Because I think it may be related to, I think David, because of the fact that he could write a song like 1 Chronicles 16, makes him able to do what his descendants are talking about, or these. So if you look at chapter 20 of 2 Chronicles, and I'm first seeing it in verse 17, and then it's repeated in, maybe it's earlier than that. Oh yes, it's in 15 and 17, that's where it is. 15 and 17, you see the same language. And the first part we could understand pretty readily, don't be afraid. Right? Now that's almost, in some ways, I take that to be like the advice to calm down. About the least likely thing to actually be able to do, right? So if you ever feel the urge to say calm down, probably best not to, right? So here, don't be afraid. All right, but in the second half, don't be dismayed either. Don't be, now, so I just wanna, this is just definitional. What does it mean to be dismayed, and why does it matter here that you be not dismayed? So just help me think about that word. The more I thought about it, the more surprised I was that that's one of those words you understand kind of, but putting it into a definition may be a little tricky. Who wants to take it on? Who's feeling bold? Don't be dismayed.
Fretful.
All right. To be dismayed is to be fretful. Psalm 37 gives that great advice: fret not. And I like that. So I'll think about that. But I want to keep pushing. Dismay. Let's think about: are there other things?
Discouraged.
Say it again.
Discouraged.
Thank you for that. I think both of those are related. I think, in my sense of things, those are responses to being dismayed. They're not the dismayed itself. When I'm dismayed, I might get discouraged. When I'm dismayed, I might fret. But what does it mean to be dismayed?
I think it is more hopeless, almost.
That's another response.
Assured that it's not going to go well.
Yes, see, that's a response to, I'm dismayed, and man, there's no hope.
You're depressed.
Well, again, that's a response to the dismay. So I know I may just be pestering foolishly enough, but I just keep inviting you to keep wrestling with that word, pushing it a little more to see what it means
it
to be.
It has a tone of disappointment.
Well, again, that's responding to it.
Is it surprise?
Does dismay surprise?
Don't dwell on it.
Unsettled.
That's again, now you're trying to give a positive response.
Overwhelmed.
Surprise, overwhelmed. I think, see, I don't know.
Is it one step further than fear?
Well, I don't know. It's attached to fear. Don't be afraid. But don't be dismayed. Maybe don't be surprised.
Well, it says nor. So it's two different things. It says don't fear not and
right, don't
nor
be dismayed.
Be dismayed.
Okay, thank you. Scott, you were going to answer?
It could be lack of faith. Is that that's not a reaction.
So that may be a cause of being dismayed. That may cause your dismay. But let's work with surprise some more. Think about, see, so here you are, but in the setting, right, Jehoshaphat, the invaders are coming and armies are coming at you. Don't be afraid of them, and don't be surprised that it's happening. And so this is something I appreciate Sister Knapp's observation here. Let's think about this for a minute. If your readiness to respond to God, because of your faith, you're not surprised with what happens. It doesn't matter what happens. I'm ready for what happens. I don't know. So that may be something to think about over the week, and we'll come back to it, but I do like that. Yes, please.
I've got two definitions. Whoa. One is when it's enacted on you, and one is for when you're enacting it on another person, causing them to dismay.
But you dismay them mm-hmm. with your performance, all right?
So the first one is, I guess, more the response. Or you're alarmed or upset or frightened.
Oh, so that puts it close to the other, to be alarmed or upset or frightened.
And then if okay. you're acting on something else, you are confounding, breaking down the courage of, by danger, difficulty, or fear of calamity.
Okay. Okay. What if we think about this? Again, I want to be as practical as possible. Think about how I can leave this class this quarter and go out better equipped to respond well. And so what if you're dismayed, this is kind of like a surprise. If you were to say, even not out loud, but in your heart, I can't believe this is happening. And then we went on even further to me. Right? But see, that's it. When I can't believe it's happening, that's dismay. That's surprise. It's not supposed to be this way. And so if we take this admonition seriously, and we're invited, we're commanded, don't be dismayed. Are we ready for that?
I was thinking maybe Abraham might be a good example. He took his son up to the mountain, and yet when the ram appeared, he was not shocked. Oh, yeah. There was like, to me, it was like, oh, yeah.
He's already said, God will provide.
Yes, and then it says in Romans that he believed God would handle this at some point anyway.
Right.
But maybe, oh yeah, might have been, that's a poor phrasing okay. of it. But it would like, he's not shocked. He said, oh, God's working here now.
Right.
And that might be a good thing.
Well, God is working here now. Thank you for that language. Notice, and this might be an example then, of someone who has set his heart. And because I've set my heart, I've kind of, you know, fixed my anchor here, my foundation, and or I built my house on the rock or something. I'm not surprised. I am not somehow taking it personally. I can't believe this happened. I can't believe this happened to me. So again, these are things to just where I'm pushing a word perhaps beyond reason. But that's at least inviting you to think about this in terms of practice. Okay, so we have one more week and we'll keep going, and I'll be glad for you to, I'm not going to specify a place to read. I'll let you pick a place and come ready to tell us about what you've been reading. Now let's close now in prayer. Holy God, we do thank you that here in the chronicler that you've inspired, the chronicler sets a picture for us of what the ideal King will be like, that your God, your King who's going to reign. Help us to learn from this, that we can look back and see your work, and we can look ahead to your plan in its fulfillment. Help us be like your voice in Hebrews 12, that we can have the cloud of witnesses and then set our minds to run the race, run with patience the race that before us, looking unto Jesus. Thank you for the good thoughts and words offered tonight as we try to refine our thinking in your word, and we do thank you for your words, and we pray in the name of Jesus. Amen.